this Mishnah says in this regard, right? Do we take the I do what's right perspective, or do we actually have to care? We have to take into consideration what people will say. So this is the first Mishnah, the second chapter of Pirkei Avot, and it's Rebbe, the author of the Mishnah. So Rebbe Omer, Rebbe said, Ezuhi derech yishara sheyavar lo ha'odam, what is the straight path a person should choose for themselves? Kol shehi tiferet le'oseha, v'tiferet lo min ha'adam. Everything that is glorious to those who take that path, and glory to them brings glory to them from others. You choose the path which is glorious inherently to those who follow that path, and it brings that people, when they watch you on that path, that they will glorify you. So what does Rabbi think about it? What do you think? What strikes you about this statement, especially in the context of what we said? Yeah, well, so we're talking about this idea of Tiferes. Tiferes means glory. Tiferes means when you glorify something, you talk about how great it is. And Rabbi's saying, you know, if you want to determine the type of way that you should act in life, you should act in a way where you feel good about what you do, because you're thinking that what I'm doing is right, and where people around you also glorify you because of what you do.
So he's saying it matters.
Seems like it matters.
Yeah, absolutely.
Seems like it does matter. Now, it's interesting, although there are different interpretations of what exactly this means. I'll give you one. One interpretation is that of the Rambam and Bar Tanur, who say it means you take the middle path. Meaning, if you are particularly, let's say, humble, and you denigrate yourself, right? Because you don't want to have an inflated ego. So then people, you'll say, I'm doing something righteous. But people around you might look at you and think, look at this person. You know, they're walking around like, you know, they don't take care of themselves. They're holding themselves in such a low way. So that's Teferes Lo Seha. That's glorious to those who follow it. You think you're doing the right thing, but people who look at you are going to think like, oh, look at this low life. Look at the way they walk around with like dirty clothes. And the opposite is also true, right? If you walk around and, you know, as arrogant, right? And like always, let's say, with overly excessively fancy and elegant clothing, and you hold yourself in very high regard, and you strut as you walk, people might look at you and say like, ah, you know, what an important person. But, you know, it's your arrogant. And so you need to choose the middle path where, on the one hand, you're honorable. On the other hand, you can be happy and proud of the type of life that you're living. That's how they interpret it. But it does certainly seem that that we do care. We care what other people think.
What is the middle path? Don't shop at Harry Rosen, shop at...
a person has to decide. But it's balanced. Everything has to be balanced. Yeah, not to... We talk about humor. You don't want to be frivolous. You don't want to be sad. You want to be happy. Right, each of these different traits, you have to find the right calibration. Right? You have to find the right balance. So the Maharal actually is bothered by this a bit. Take a look at source number two. Okay, so Eze Derech Shiyavar Lo Adam Kol Shidvaras Lo Sed Veras Lo Adam says Yesh Lishol. We should ask Achar She Amar. After we've already said Kol Shidvaras Lo Sed, Lama Hutzrich Lomar O V'Tiferas Lo Min Adam. Right, once we're saying that you choose the path which is good for you, you feel good about it, it glorifies you, why do I need to mention that you also need to do the type of things where other people praise you for them? I mean, who cares? If you're doing the right thing, why does it matter whether other people will praise you for it? That's the question.
You shouldn't maybe care about that.
Well, that's what you would think. That's what I would have thought. But it doesn't sound like that's what the rabbi's saying here. And if you take a look at the continuation, he says, no, it's not true. V'nireh ki ratz alon var kama dvarim sheim tovim ba'atzmam sha'adam oseh osam, v'en teferes el osah, ach enam teferes min adam. There are a lot of things that you know that they're okay, you know they're good, maybe God knows they're good, but people watch you, and they don't think that. They don't think they're good. They're going to look at you and think you're doing the wrong thing.
Yeah, but But doesn't that depend on their character?
Maybe it does.
Not your character.
Maybe it does. No one's, no, now, we, and you're sort of raising an interesting question, which is, if don't we expect people to give you the benefit of the doubt? And the answer might be we do. But we don't, that doesn't mean you should put yourself in a situation where they easily could judge you unfavorably, and then they have to give you the benefit of the doubt.
Well, no, but that may or may not be true. For example, say, I saw you get in a car and Chewbacca and drive away.
Mm-hmm.
I know you. I know that you're a regular guy. I would say he had to have a reason for doing that. To Shabbos, he had to be justified because he wouldn't have done it if he didn't have a reason. Someone was dying or
that's
whatever.
Totally fair. And you know what? Obviously, there's going to be times.
Know the person
right.
You see them.
Right. Well, you know, but someone who didn't know might think differently. But 100%. I think we do expect that from people. The question is, should we act in a way where we make them, you know, have to make that judgment call.
No, I would just, I drop it. I'd say, you had a reason, you're
right.
A righteous guy. I mean,
that's, you know. And that's fair. So the Ramah also says, though, that if there's a certain type of path, there's certain things that we do. If you think of an example, we'll mention, you know, think of somebody who davens or prays very loudly. Shulchan Aruch talks about this, right? Someone saying Kaddish, that prayer that mourners say, and you yell, hey, Shmei, Rabbah, like loud, right? Like you're really excited to that God should glorify His name in this world, and you're like, this is religious. I am very religious. Look how religious I am. And what's someone who doesn't know going to think? This is like yelling, Aries, show. What are you doing? Like, what are you doing? So there are certain types of things where we know that they're, you know, why doing it for, I might know that I'm doing it for the right intentions, but other people will insult me. He says, Ach en tferes me'am ratzalomar, sha'adam haroa megano to'akach. Someone who sees will insult you for it. Like, what are you doing? What is this? You know, you're at a basketball game, you're yelling so loudly. Like, what are you doing?
That's like, you should be taking the middle road.
Right. Now you could think, like, okay, that person wants to yell at me but I'm doing the right thing. It says no. But there is that. Imshib emes derech azer teferes adam atzmo. Even though truly it's glorious for that person, right? Yesh chshad min haroe. The onlooker is suspicious. Al yivarer derech zelefi shetzarech latsei sedei shemayim viyadei habrio. A person should not choose this path. They need to fulfill their obligation towards God and towards others. Towards others meaning that you need to act in a way where people appreciate that what you're doing is right. Not just that you know what you're doing is right and to heck with them. That's what he says here. Right? And he repeats it here. Va'ikr shabar Rabbi Lalami. And where Rabbi is coming to teach us is, Shalom yomar adam shkem shnav razehu nav ato be'emet ma'lo labriot. Person shouldn't say, since it's good, this is the right thing to do. What do I care what people say? Don't say that. That a person's actions should be glorified by those aside from themselves. A pretty powerful statement. Okay? Thoughts? So Rebbe is taking a pretty strong stance on this one. We do care what people think about us. We do. Why? Why do you think it matters so much? What other people say. Like, aren't the, you know, well, like, what's, that's the type of path that I have to constantly be thinking about what other people might say?
Thank you.
What do you think, Claudia?
Because it's not about you, it's about what the entire community is, about the people around you, it's about the grandchildren, it's about, you know, the example I show for my child and my grandchild, you know, it's not about you. So much, like, I know it's easy to say, oh, I don't care what that person says, but I think we have a responsibility to the community at large.
Okay. Right. Yeah, what do you think?
Hmm?
No, okay.
I disagree with that.
Yeah.
You don't believe
well,
that
say,
we have a...
For instance,
if the rabbi... Not this rabbi, another rabbi.
It could be me. It's okay.
Was the person that walking into the McDonald's,
yes.
And you saw him with the cheese and the whatever, don't you think that it will be hard for his community to sit down and listen to a sermon from him about that.
Yeah, but I don't think a
it affects the community.
I just don't think a rabbi would do that in the first
place. No, I'm not saying that.
I'm just saying that.
So it affects the entire community because they're not going to want to listen to him preach about not doing it.
Of course.
It affects your impact. What do you think, Paul?
Well, I'll take a higher road than that. I think the Jewish people have suffered so much in the past that we have to be on a higher level of integrity and honesty and whatever to prevent the media from hammering us again, to prevent the goyim for looking at us and yelling and screaming at us. I think Hashem has put us on a much higher level.
I think this is a good point.
We have to be there. So in a way, it does matter what other people, because I don't want to give them ammunition. They've got enough bullets already.
Right.
I don't want to give them more bullets.
But even without that, they're going to criticize you anyways.
People
are people. People have always got the...
Right, but
you
I
know
wanna,
what they're saying? There's a Spanish saying.
I don't want to give them bullets.
I hear you.
There's
so
a
you're a representative. Yeah.
It says the camel never sees his own... You know what I'm saying? He's looking at the other camels and saying, look at the hump on that guy. Look at the hump on him. He doesn't see himself with a hump.
Right.
That's the saying.
Yeah.
We're always looking at somebody else and saying, look at him, look at the way he dresses, look at the way he smells.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know if we can.
And again, I certainly wouldn't condone that. I think another point he made here is, and I think this is relevant to what you are all saying, though, but I think the part of the point here is that if you live life the right way, if you take the proper way, I think we have enough confidence in our lifestyle that people should be amenable to it. Meaning, if you're doing something that people look at you and say, like, what are they doing? And then they insult you. Doesn't that point to the fact, meaning, you know, if you make one decision every once in a while that someone's going to object to, that's fine. But if we're talking about generally, if you live life in such a way that people insult you after they see you, or they think less of you because of your religiosity or because of the path that you're doing, doesn't that show that you're doing something wrong?
No.
Meaning religiosity, religion as a whole, on the whole, is something that should be beautiful, that should be attractive.
But we're talking a lot of theory here.
Okay, we'll get to some practice soon. We're starting with the theory, we'll get to the practice.
I'll get to the practice side.
Okay.
You know this trial that's going on in Quebec?
Which
one? Hasidic Jews.
Oh, yeah.
What's going on?
You're talking about the one with secular education.
Right. You're following that trial?
No.
Well, there's criticism of Jewish people because all Jews are lumped in there. And we're getting criticized. We're not the Hasidic Jews. You teach your kids English. You teach your kids French. You teach them geography. They're not. They're getting criticized. And all the Jews are being thrown into that lump. And that hurts.
Right. Meaning, and I think the point being that... The point being that if people are looking at you as a Jew and the way you act, they're like, you know, aghast at it because of something that you do, there might be something wrong there.
But then now we're worrying not only about the Jew, but we're worrying about the non-Jew.
Okay, there's going to have to be a counter-argument. We'll get to that. But in terms of the theory, I think we're saying you can't just say, like, I do what's right, doesn't matter what people think. It seems like that just taking that perspective is inappropriate. If you take a look, this is not just in Perkei Avot, it's also, we find it in Tanakh. So you take a look at source number 3. By the way, I think I forgot to take one of God's real names out, so excuse me for that, we won't throw it out. But so this is, we're just going to go to the end here. This is actually talking about the story of the Jews as they entered Israel, where Moshe is talking to the tribe of Reuven, Gad, and half of Manasseh, and telling them that they don't have the right to stay in Aver HaYarden, which is the other side of the Jordan River. They need to go and fight in front of, with the rest of the Jewish people and conquer Israel, and then they can return, right? And he gives them a whole speech about this. So you have to do it, and if you don't do it, you're like traitors, and you'll be shirking your duty. If you look at the end here, he says, okay, he says, Vayomer Lahem Moshe. Moshe says to them, if you do this thing, if you get ready in front of God for war, Vavarchem kol chalutz es hayardeim ne'ashen, and you will pass with all the armed men in front over the yarding in front of God. Ad harishoet ayvav mipanav, right? You're going to fight with all the rest of us until we get rid of all our enemies. And then we'll conquer the land in front of God. And then you will go back. Right? You will be clear before God and before Israel. Okay? You have to be clear before God and before Israel. Take a look at source number 5. The Gemara, the Talmud, takes this notion of v'yitem nikiyim me Hashem Yisrael, being clean before God and before Israel, to mean you need to act in a way where people see clearly that what you're doing is right. That you're not allowed to act in a way which brings about suspicion. Okay, take a look at this. Actually referring to, and this is something I think we can relate to, which is talking about the public collector of tzedakah funds for the community. Okay? And says the Talmud in source number 5, Gabay tzedakah she'en lehem aniyim lechalek, someone who's in charge of collecting charity that doesn't have any poor people. So you collect it, they used to go around, they collect money, and let's say, for whatever reason, that day, you're out. You know, you gave all the people who needed the appropriate portion they deserve, and you're left over with leftover funds. Okay? So, what do you do with it? You know? Portin l'achirin v'ein portin l'atzman. Okay? If you want to change the money, like to exchange it for smaller coins or bigger coins, you can't take it yourself. You cannot pocket any of that money, even if you're going to give them change for it. Let's say you wanted to... So if you're a gabbai tzedakah, I guess the contemporary example would be you have like a lot of tzedakah change and you're in charge. You have this wallet or container of funds from the community. And let's say there are 20s, 520s in there and you have a $100 bill. You should not be the one taking those last 520s and putting them in your wallet. Because you are in charge of the tzedakah funds. If someone sees you...
They think you're stealing.
Yeah.
Well, but are you putting in the 100?
Yeah, now, and you know that. And you know you're not stealing.
Oh, you put in the 100.
Yeah, you're not stealing. But who knows? But maybe they won't know. And you have to be careful not to give off any negative impression when you're in that role. Right? Gabay tamchoish in the money in the chalik. Right? Let's say this, the tamchoi was they would collect food. Food collectors for the community. Like a soup kitchen. That's what they would do. They would go around and collect food for people who needed it. And you run out of food. Mochrin lachem v'ein mochrin latzman. You sell the food to others, not to yourself. But I'll pay you full. No. Why? Mishum shenemar v'yitem nikiyim me Hashem u'me Yisrael. Right? We need to be clear in front of God and in front of Israel. Now again, you could have said, look, I know I'm honest, and I did all the accounting, and I have all the money accounted for, and I'm going to pay for this food. And you could say, I don't have to schlep around and find someone else to buy it. Okay, I'll do it. And I know that I'm doing the right thing.
How can you be the treasurer of a Jewish organization?
Right. So the point is that, you're saying,
because... give you money, you put it in the bank, and then you write the checks.
Right. Okay, so you're saying there's like a conflict of interest. Right, 100%. And that's what the point is. And even if you'll say you're doing the right thing, but it creates suspicion. And we have a responsibility to present ourselves to the other people in a noble and honest way. We have to look honest, not just be honest. You have to look honest.
I guess I have to leave now.
Now, this is referring to...
I don't think that...
And if you take a look in source number 6, we'll get to the counter-argument in a second. Maybe someone wants to read this, the English here. It's pretty... It's pretty expansive, but the responsibility of charity collectors have. Yeah, go for it, please.
Okay, charity collectors must not separate from one another in the marketplace, but they must be within sight of one another, as when one is in the gateway collecting and the other is in the store, if the collector finds money in the street, he shall not put it into his pocket, but into the charity bag until he reaches home, which when he may take.
Okay, so let's do those 2 points. The first is supposed to stay near each other.
Yeah.
Supposed to stay near each other. That you know, it sounds a little bit paranoid, but we're really particular about this. You have this communal tzedakah funds. And you're not, if you find money on the floor, you didn't even take it from the side, you just found it on the floor. Don't put it in your pocket. Wait till you get home. Okay? It's really pretty expansive. Continue. If the collector collects, that's a bit repetitive.
Okay, if the collector collects a personal debt from a friend in the street, he shall not put the money into his pocket, but into the charity bag, and take it when he reaches home. He shall not count the coins of the coupon.
The coupon is like the stock box, essentially.
Two at a time, but one by one to avoid suspicion. As it is written, and you shall be guiltless before the Lord and before
Israel. Again, Yisem Nikim Me'ashem Umi Yisrael. So we really go to pretty great lengths to avoid any suspicion.
Ralph takes the tzedakah box and he locks it in his office and he brings it over the next
that
day.
That doesn't happen every day, okay, because everybody was gone one morning. The tzedakah box was sitting here. And I took the tzedakah box and went straight to the office. But no one saw me. No one saw what I did here.
Okay.
But what am I supposed to do? Leave the tzedakah
box? No, of course you're supposed to do that. We're not talking about that. We're talking about...
In the pot. That's
right,
the
yeah.
No, but for example, I watch people come up, they'll take, say, a $10 bill. Say they want to give $5 in tzedakah.
Yeah,
they'll
yeah.
open the box, they'll put the 10 in, they'll yeah. take the 5 out, put the 5 out.
Well, they're not the Gabbai tzedakah. They're not the Gabbai tzedakah. They're not the...
The question is, should Ralph himself
in front of everyone.
Right, right.
That's the question.
Yeah. Now, I think Chaim makes a good point, which is this is a unique situation where you do have a unique role as the person in charge of the funds. And in doing so, you know, you have a unique responsibility to make sure that you're doing everything honestly because you have that opportunity to steal.
Like the treasurer, like
exactly, because you could just take it for like a few cents here and there and no one will know. So you have to make it very clear that you're only being honest and never give off that impression. But the point, yeah.
This thing about going home and doing it, you have to, if you do it at home, there's got to be nobody at home. To see you do it.
Well, I think at some point you probably can explain what you're doing.
No, I don't think that's
it. And you're saying not even okay. All right, interesting. Again, and how this plays out nowadays is different. We don't really have it in the same way, but I think you get the impression. And yeah, this reference, if you just without look at source number 4, we have at the end there, it's Matzachim V'Sekel To B'nei Lukim V'Yadam. Anybody recognize that verse? Vintzachin, right? We say that in Berkat Mazon, prayer after for meals every day. What does that mean? And that you will find favor and approbation in the eyes of God, the Adam and man. Now, here's the thing, okay? And I don't want to look at the other point of the argument here. Is this? I think we've demonstrated that we certainly do take into consideration what other people will say or think. However, there has to be a limiting factor here, which is if you always worry about what people will say. Then what will happen? You won't do anything. And what does this mean? Meaning, and let's say you're just simply, I don't know, on a business trip and you want to make a blessing before you eat. And people are going to look at you weird, like you're muttering to yourself before you put something in your mouth. Are we going to say, well, they're going to think I'm crazy, so I'm not going to... I mean, it has to be at some point. You have to say no. You have to, and if you take a look here in source number 7, well, this is it's pretty. We don't need to read the whole thing. This is actually the first in the whole code of Jewish law. This is the very first statement by Moshe Isserles, the Ashkenazic halachic commentator. It's the first thing he talks about. If you look at the beginning here, it talks about you have to have the Lord in front of you constantly and recognize you're always in the presence of God and that He's always watching you, and that's going to make direct the way that you act because you'll talk differently. And you'll do things differently. And then he says, at the very end there, look at the bold, V'lo yitbayesh mifnei b'nei Adam, hamal'igim ala b'avodah Hashem barach. Don't be embarrassed in front of those who are mocking you, right? People are mocking you because, you know, of what you're doing. People are mocking you because you're praying. People are mocking you because you make a blessing before you eat food. Doesn't matter. Who cares what they say? You do what's right. Now, my question is, and I think it's pretty answerable, but you see, well, what about what we've been saying until now? Isn't this about, I thought we don't care what people think. I mean, it sounds like we don't care.
It's not talking about actual mitzvot. Here we're talking about mitzvot.
Right. Right.
What's if you're doing a mitzvah, if you're actually doing a mitzvah, then you're not supposed to care what people think. You're supposed to do it anyway. But in the previous page, we're talking about optional things, things which aren't mitzvot.
Right. Well, okay. Yeah, good. Anything else? Any other options? Chumras are the problem. Okay. Well, it seemed like it was a general statement before that, you know, the way that you act should be a way which brings you glory to, right? It has to be teferet min ha'adam, glorified by people. Okay? So I think there are two points to be made. Or one is the type of thing that you're doing, meaning at some point you do what's right and, you know, like for instance, what Paul said before, if I know that I need to get into a car on Shabbat because I'm taking someone to the hospital or for whatever reason, at that point, I got to do it, even if someone's gonna watch and say, "Oh, look, the rabbi went into the car." No, but like, it's more important. Like, some considerations overcome this, outweigh this consideration of what will people say. But I also think it depends on the types of people. Meaning, there are certain people who are gonna make fun of everything. Are gonna make wisecracks about everything, and you don't have to worry about those people. We're talking about reasonable people who will have actual. You know, again, we always encourage giving people the benefit of the doubt. But, you know, someone sees the Gabbai Tzedakah, the collector of communal charity funds, taking money out of the Tzedakah box, that's a natural reason to start thinking, well, maybe they shouldn't be the Gabbai Tzedakah anymore. Whereas, if you are just doing the right thing and someone's going to make fun of you for that, then this is not someone that you need to worry about. Nevertheless, and that's what the Ramah says, you do what's right. God is the one watching you. You're always in God's presence. And he's the person, or he's the being, that you answer to. And you don't need to worry about the ma'igim, the people who mock you. However, if you take a look at source number 8, and this is the comments of the Chafetz Chaim, Rishmael Meir Kagan, a well-known commentary on the Shulchan Aruch of the Mishnah Berurah, and he where he says... that it's not so simple. He says, "V'nei bnei adam." He says, "V'al kol panim lo yikotet imahem." He says, "Don't argue with them." Right? I mean, you might think, like in the Ritzum Ra saying, like, you know, I'm going to do the right thing, and then if they start making fun of me, I'm going to yell at them, like, "No, you're wrong," and like, "I'm doing the right thing." And no, don't fight with them. Not worth it. Meaning, it's a balance. Exactly. Right? We want to balance azut. Azut means brazenness, meaning I don't care. I do being headstrong, and you don't want to be feisty. You don't want to. We're not trying to be the type of people who start arguments and get into fights with people. So it's the balance between I do what I know is right when it's right, and if there are going to be mali game, I can't worry about that. Balance by, but we don't want arguments. We don't want azut. We don't want brazenness. Okay? Ve'ein ra'i l'shtamash men ha'klal afiyu b'avura Hashem barach ki yikna kinyan b'nafsho liyot az afiyu shalom makom v'do yit barach. He says, if we start, you know, getting into fights with people when they start making fun of us, you know, it will be the type of people generally that start these sort of arguments and are brazen and are headstrong. And that's not something, that's not a trait that we want to generally have. So number one, the first point he's making, is that even though you're saying, I don't care what you people say, I'm going to do what's right, that doesn't mean you tell that to them. It means you tell that to yourself. And number two, and I think this is even more interesting, if you look at the second comment here, Hamal Yigilei Malav, maybe if someone wants to read it, read the bold. Okay. If he's an average person who in the company of a great man, he shouldn't be embarrassed to learn to do the mitzvah. If it's possible for him to perform it not directly in their presence, it's even better. Meaning, it sounds like, look, like, if you know, if you're in a situation where you need to do a mitzvah, like you need to pray and you're in public, then pray in public because you have no other choice. And if people start looking at you and saying, what are you doing and why are you sort of muttering to yourself, right? Like when Chana was in the Beit HaMikdash and Eli HaKohen sees her muttering to herself and starts to think that she's, you know, not all there. So then, but if that's where you need to pray, then fine. But if you can go into a private place and do what you think is right and also not subject yourself to this ridicule where people are looking down at you and mocking you, then you should do that. We're not looking for fights here. We're not looking for that ridicule, right? Because it's always the balance.
We're not looking to hide at everything we do either.
I think that's legitimate. And he says, and it's interesting, he says that if you're someone who people will learn from, meaning if you're in the company of great men, meaning people who are not going to take you seriously, let's say, and they're not going to learn from you, they're just going to mock you. So the Mr. Brewer says, and I think your point's a good one, that we shouldn't be always have to hide, but if you can avoid, if you know that they're going to mock, then you know they're going to make fun of you, you know they're going to make comments, you know they're going to be sarcastic.
They're not such great men, are they?
Great men doesn't mean great, yes. Great men does not mean great in terms of their righteousness. It means in terms of their stature.
So there are streets in Europe that I've been on where I've been told by the local community not to wear a keeper.
Right.
Wear a hat instead of a keeper.
Right.
So normally you go to show you wear a keeper and whatever, but you're hiding it because you're wearing a hat because you don't want people to know because you don't want to get beaten up.
Right.
Walking down the street. That exists today.
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. So I think that might be a good example, or,
Here we're not talking about a safety issue. That's a safety
That's
issue.
That's true.
This is not a safety issue. This is just a discomfort issue.
I think it's a discomfort. It's a fight. It's a discomfort. I think it's also a certain disrespect. Disrespect toward the, observance that you're subjecting yourself to. And the point is that you can't worry about what people say when you need to do it. But if you can avoid it, and I think you're raising a good point, Albert, which is that look, like we can't, do we have to go and hide? I mean, this is a good point. But the other consideration is again that why subject yourself to this? Why start a fight? Why create a commotion? Do what you think is right, because you know it's right, and because you don't need to show off to people. So this is like the theory, and I think what we're saying is it's a balance. The balance between, do we care what people say? We do. Objectively, it's Teferes Lo Min Ha'Adam. We want to create a good impression. And Judaism and the proper life of Torah and Mitzvot is one which should be attractive and beautiful, that people should be attracted to. And if we're doing it in a way which turns people away, then something's wrong. At the same time, there will be times in your life where you have to make decisions which people will mock you for and ridicule you for. And if you can't avoid it and it's the right thing to do, then that's what you have to do. So it is always a balance. So I think going back to this particular question is where this really comes to the forefront, this conflict is that of Marit Ayin. So Marit Ayin, also called Chashad sometimes, is this, it's what I would call the concern of giving the appearance of doing something forbidden. Marit Ayin literally means in the sight of the eye. And what we're concerned of is that you do something where people will suspect that you committed a sin.
Is the person who's seeing another person do something wrong,
well, again, this is the good point. They shouldn't think that. If again, because last week was the onlooker, and this week we're the person doing it. So if you're the onlooker, you should not jump to conclusions that someone's doing something wrong. But if you're the person that's actually, let's say in our case, you have that soy burger with the cheese on it, and you're eating it. Our question is, do I have to worry that maybe they won't? They missed last week's shiur, and they're not going to give me the benefit of the doubt. And then they're going to start saying things, or it's going to impugn me, or they're going to get the wrong impression. When do I have to worry about that? Okay, so you take a look at source number 9. This is a Gemara in Kritut. It's the it's one of the most important Gemaras here regarding this problem. So Amar. So we're talking about there's a prohibition against eating animal blood. One of the things we don't eat is blood from a slaughtered animal. That's why if someone slaughters an animal, they'll salt it. And part of the process is to remove all the blood so as to avoid any consumption of blood when they sell the actual meat. So the Gemara tells us that, biblically, the blood of fish is permissible. You can eat fish blood. Okay? So now, Amarav, Dam Dagim Shakinsu Asor. However, Rav says, if you gather the blood of fish into some sort of utensil, it's forbidden, it's prohibited. Why?
It's like it's blood of something.
Because they're going to see the blood. They're going to think you're just eating animal blood. And even though biblically, you know you're doing the right thing. You know that I didn't do anything wrong. And the Torah says you can't eat animal blood, but fish blood's okay. You have to worry. You have to worry about what people will say.
I've never heard that you can eat fish blood.
Well, it's not particularly appetizing, is it?
I've never heard of that.
Is it because it's cold? They're cold. I don't know.
Cold? I don't know. I don't know that they serve this in the restaurants too frequently, but I'm not sure that's only because of the Marta iron issue. I think you have other problems with fish blood.
Yeah.
Good, good. I don't think it's marred iron.
Is it because you don't check the fish? Is that the reason?
Why? Yeah. I think they learn it out from it's some sort. It's Xerida Katuv. It's like they learn it out from the Pesukim. They infer it. I forgot exactly what it is, but Damanefesh, something. It's inferred from the verses in the Torah that it's only the blood of animals that's a problem and not the blood of fish. I don't have a logical explanation as to why that is. I don't know.
So another shear, Charlie.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Maybe.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know if I'm going to, you know. If you're fascinated as to the reason why animal blood is a problem and fish blood
ask
is not.
Core website, ask the rabbi.
Oh, yeah. So, and you're welcome to. I'd love to hear some research, fascinating details as to the difference between the blood of fish and animals. But for now, we're just going to assume. Take it as we're given it, that you can eat fish blood biblically, but not animal blood.
So a fish does not have a soul. Is that would you infer that a fish doesn't have a soul?
I don't know. I'm gonna plead the fifth on this one and say all I know is that this is the way it is. Okay, so the problem though, we have a problem. So it says Mesve Dam Dagim Dam Chagavim Mutar. We have a statement from our tradition which says that no, that the blood of grasshoppers and a fish is permissible, even ideally. So why are you telling me it's prohibited? What's the problem? So we say bishalokinso. Okay, it's a little gross, but we say it's a case where we didn't collect it in a receptacle, meaning you sort of had it right from the fish. So then people will know that it's fish blood, right? Okay, so that's the first answer. So it's a problem, again, if it arouses suspicion, you have it in a cup. I don't know if anyone's going home to eat fish for dinner tonight, but if you have it in a cup, then we have to worry because they're not going to know where it's from, and that might be a problem. If you don't, then it's not. We say, no, it's still a problem. So, ki kamarav b'kashikin, v'asagavi mahachi shtayim b'shalo kinso mi asur. So we're saying, is that true? If you just suck it from the animal itself, is it a problem by an animal? Vatanya dam shagav kikar goro v'ochlo shabei shnayim motzeso uvolo. So there's a problem because it sounds like in the case of bipeds, this small type of animal, which apparently I don't know if we have the tradition to eat these small animals anymore, like these grasshopper type things, but the tradition is that. It's even okay if you. It's also okay in those cases if you don't collect them from a receptacle. So the point is that if you really do it right from the animal, it's not just fish and grasshopper blood that's okay. There are other types of their small animals that are also okay. So we say, "Ki tanya hi matnisa de'ipe kashkashim ki kam arav aser lesbe kashkashim." He says, "No. Even in a case where you have it in the cup, when is it okay? If there's scales in the cup." Exactly. So if you have scales in the cup with the fish blood, then people can look at, again, Sarheim, then people can look at that cup and say, okay, it's fish blood.
Well, don't you need
and that's great.
Don't you need
bon appetit.
As well?
No, meaning the fish has fins, but you don't need to keep the fins in the cup. anyways, so the point is, what do we see from this Gemara, though? We have this prohibition of marita ayin, right? Unnecessarily giving people the suspicion or allowing people to suspect that you're doing a prohibition, even though, again, you're not, but they might think you are, and that's a problem. But in terms of what there is a dispensation when you make it clear, you have a siman, we call a sign, which clarifies that what you're doing is not the prohibition it may look like, then it becomes okay. Okay? If you take a look at source number 10, we have another application of this. with almond milk and meat, right? So we don't eat meat and milk together. That's basar b'chalav. That's a problem. But milk means cow's milk. Right. Theoretically, almond milk, you know, is fine. That's not the type of milk that's a prohibition. But what are people going to say if you see that they see you with, you know, your milk and the meat? They're going to think.
Have a container that says almond milk.
Ah, okay. So the container is a good point. So they're going to think, they might think that you're eating meat and milk together, right? It's against the old Uncle Mushy song. We never, never, ever eat meat and milk together. But they're going to think that you're violating an old song here. It's a problem. So says the Ramah, Nagu laso chalav mishkedim. We have a custom to make milk from almonds. Umanichim ba basar of. Hoel v'eino rak min rabbanan. So point number one, which is really interesting here. This is a point of great discussion, which is, he says, number one, if you put chicken meat in the almond milk, that's just okay. Why? Because even if you would take cow's milk and mix it with chicken, it would just be rabbinically prohibited, meaning the biblical prohibition is meat from an animal and milk, and a chicken isn't considered meat biblically in that regard, and therefore it's just rabbinic. And since it's not even real milk, it's also almond milk, we don't worry about suspicion. It's like two steps removed. So it sounds like the Ramah is saying here that we don't worry about Marit Ayin when it comes to rabbinic prohibitions. Now, this is a matter of greater discussion. Some authorities hold that that he didn't mean that. He might have only meant in private, not publicly. But this is one. But that's the first point he makes, that on a rabbinic level, if you have a rabbinic prohibition, you don't worry about marit ayin. About basar behema yesh laniach etza chalav shkedim mishem marit ayin. If you're taking regular meat and you take the almond milk, you put the almonds next to the milk. You leave them there to show that that you're not doing exactly. So it sounds like on the one hand there is a problem. I mean, if you didn't have the almonds there, that wouldn't be okay because people won't know. But you have a way of remedying the issue by leaving the almonds there.
That's the same way as you can put the container that helps genetically manufactured white stuff.
Exactly. So the question is the applicability of this.
But here we're talking about what a Jew might say about another Jew. But what if there are other people that are not Jewish?
He mentioned that, yeah.
Yeah, and they think, wow.
We discussed
look,
that before.
Look what's going on here. There's blood. There's milk. So again, you're worried about what other people would think.
I think you're suggesting that what if they just don't know? Like, what if they? And I think let me ask your question differently. What if you do something which someone who has a proper, you know, education would know is not a problem, but someone who's uneducated might think is a problem?
Right.
Do you have to worry about that? Is that Marit Ayin? So if you look at it's great that you mentioned it. If you look at source number 11, Rav Moshe Feinstein says that's not a problem. He says that that Marit Ayin doesn't mean that I do something totally okay, but someone who is not educated might think it's a problem. Marit Ayin is I do something that's generally prohibited, but I'm doing it in a way that's permissible, and that gives off the impression that that I'm actually doing something prohibited because they don't know that I'm doing it in a special way. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing something that should generally be permissible, and you know someone who's uneducated is going to misconstrue your judgment, then that's not the problem, Marit Ayin. And I think it again points to this like juggling act, where on the one hand we want to give a good impression, we don't want to give a false impression, but also we can't worry about every single person who's going to say like something. Like if I'm going to eat, you know, if
yeah.
Okay.
That it is cow's milk on the table, but it's not meat.
Right. And you have to make that clear, though.
Well, you put almonds beside okay. the milk to make it clear.
Right, so right. So you got to find a way. Right, 100%, 100%, 100%, 100%, 100%. So we'll mention all these, we're running out of time, but we'll mention all these things briefly. So if you take a look at source number 11, we'll read it inside. Moshe's actually, it's actually an interesting tshuva. I didn't bring the whole thing for you. He was asked about Can you drive to Shul after women usually light candles, you know, significantly before sunset? And often, you know, the men in the family or even will drive to Shul afterward. And so the question is that a problem? Because people might think that you're driving on Shabbat because candles were already lit.
I don't know why it's not a problem.
Okay.
How would people know candles were lit?
By the way, it's worth noting that even if they won't know, we generally, when something is prohibited because of Marta Ayin, it's always prohibited, even if you do it in private. So that might relate to this. But I don't know. You know, let's say candle lighting, they put the A in the bulletin. Candle lighting is A, 820. And then you're driving after candle lighting. So what if someone thinks, well, you know, you accept Shabbat when you light candles. And there are people driving to Shul on Shabbat because they lit candles already. So Moshe says, that's not Marta Ayin, that's them making a mistake. Most people who are well-educated know that women who light candles accept Shabbat when they light candles, and men who don't usually accept Shabbat later. That's not something you need to worry about. Now, he says himself, you know what, now that you're mentioning it, you know, that's pretty strict, but maybe I'll stop. Like, I'm going to try not to drive after candle lighting anymore. That's what he says. But don't get too upset about the people who do. So again, it's this balance that you can't worry about every single thing someone might say, but you also can't disregard what people will say. So in terms of some of these specific questions, regarding one of them is regarding going into a non-kosher restaurant to get a drink or to use the washroom. If you look at source 12, I'll let you look at it inside yourselves. Ramosha is pretty strong against different ways of interpreting it. When Moshe is talking about a dairy restaurant run by people who are Jewish but not observing. First of all, he says that you can't just go, just because it's dairy doesn't mean that it's okay. I mean,
run or owned by?
It says owned by in the tshuva, but I imagine what? I translate it as run by, that's true, but I think that's because the point is that they're not, doesn't have a hechsher, there's no supervision, it's just... So I think his first point is that just because it's dairy doesn't mean that it's okay. I mean, there might be problems with kosher even for a dairy restaurant. And he says pretty strongly that you should not enter such restaurants even to eat something entirely permissible because of prohibited appearance and suspicion. Even if you're going to buy a salad, let's say, you still shouldn't do that because that's Marta Ayin. Now, Rabbi Heber, who I actually brought for you in Source 14, which we'll get to in just a second, but Heber suggests that, so the question is Ramosha saying you never should walk into a non-kosher restaurant? Or maybe he's saying you should never buy something directly from the non-kosher restaurant. Also, nowadays when it's pretty well known that, you know, non-kosher restaurants, first of all, if you're going to a business meeting with a bunch of colleagues, and often what they'll do is they'll have like a TV dinner or something like that for you, it's separate. And that's pretty well known.
It's wrapped and sealed.
Right, and that's known, and it's known people do such things. So it might be different. But in terms of what Moshe actually says, he says you should be reluctant to go into the restaurant. He says if it's a great need, if you're very hungry, if there's great discomfort, and there's no other alternative, then you can go. There's no other alternative. But he says, if people who know you are outside the restaurant, you should tell them that you're going in to buy something permissible because you're very hungry. In the inside of the restaurant, they'll see that you're buying something permissible, then you don't have to worry. But if there's someone who knows you and they see you as a, you know, upstanding good citizen, and then they know that they're going to think, like, what's he doing going into there? What's she doing going into the restaurant? You tell them, I'm going in to buy something permissible. I'm not buying any of the non-kosher dairy food. I think it's worth noting that he is dealing with a sticky issue, which is people have the impression that you can eat out dairy in a non-kosher restaurant. And he's you know, Ramosha is saying you don't want to give them that impression. So you tell them...
Is he saying I can walk into the restaurant for a business meeting, eat the wrapped meal, and be okay?
So Ramosha doesn't say that explicitly, but...
Are you saying he does say that?
No, I'm not saying he says that. Well, all Ramosha says explicitly is you shouldn't go into a non-kosher restaurant to get food unless you're in great discomfort.
That doesn't apply to most of us.
Okay, that's fair. He says you should not.
Most of us, so you go into a business.
Right. Right. So, Rabbi Heber writes that he thinks that number one, it's you know, if you're going to use the washroom, for instance, let's say, so then that's not the same thing he's talking about. We're buying food from the actual restaurant, and he says that one of the factors that affects this issue is the factor of what is known to be true. Meaning, if something's widespread, very common, people know that you get, you know, sort of wrapped meals when you go to a restaurant. People know that you can go into a non-kosher restaurant, buy a soda, or to use the washroom. If these things are known, that that does change the equation. So if you look at source 14, this is our own Rabbi Heber from the COR, and he notes a bunch of interesting applications of this. He says, these dispensations can be applied to many of today's assimilated products. The dispensations are, number one, you do it, make a hecker, meaning you make a clear sign that what you're doing is not the prohibition it looks like. Number two, when it's well known that there's a permissible way to do what you're doing, and it doesn't necessarily indicate that you're doing something prohibited. Number three is where the products don't look at all like their non-kosher equivalents. He says is, for example, due to the fact that non-dairy creamer and margarine have become increasingly popular, they may be served at a meat meal or immediately after a meat meal without a hecker, without a sign. So I guess that speaks to Paul's question. I mean, maybe it seems like now it's pretty commonplace for weddings, you know, kosher caterers to bring out non-dairy creamer after a wedding, so people know that you're not eating milk. So when it's popular, now, if it wasn't popular, we'd have a different discussion. He also says cheese pizza topped with soy pepperoni, a beef burger topped with soy cheese, and even imitation crab meat might also qualify for a dispensation if their use is already well known, or their tastes and textures are substantially different. Since these points are somewhat subjective, the common practice is to require proper signage on their menus and menu boards, meaning you make a sign. So it's not, you know, you say it's a soy burger, right, like on the menu.
Or on the
I don't know if I. It's an interesting question. I would have certainly asked one of the authorities. I wouldn't rule on that. But I think what he mentions is like having it on the menu, like right. Just a COR. I don't know. That's a good question. I'm not sure. It's an interesting point. I think it might be relevant, but I don't know if that would be enough. That's pretty general. You know, and then maybe they'll think that COR they might get the impression that COR is saying it's okay to eat a cheeseburger, right? I mean, because unless you indicate something about that specific dish. So essentially, you know, what he says here is that there are ways of, he says on the invoice, on the receipt, there are ways of making it clear that you're not doing the prohibition, and you have to do that. But there's ways, so I think what we're seeing is, again, it's this calculus between doing what we know is right, or think is and we know to be totally okay, balancing that with how people will perceive us based on it. And none of those are good enough on their own. Meaning, we can't always think about what people will say. But we can't also disregard what people will say, because it is important to give off an appropriate impression. And and Judaism is something where people should look at us, observing it appropriately, and say, "That's great. That's beautiful. It's wonderful." And think that we're honest and consistent. And like Paul was mentioning, we don't want to give ammo to people. They have enough. We have to hold ourselves to a very high standard because we really are representatives of God. And so it's always a balance between, you know, me knowing what I know is right, and ultimately I answer to God, but that doesn't mean I disregard the people who are watching me also.
But the idea of all these substitutions, for example, that soy, if you go to Slice and Bites and you see the pizza that looks like it's got pepperoni on it.
Right.
Or you go to a party and they serve crab meat that looks like shrimp or looks like something else. Is that appropriate also?
And you really should ask. You really should ask one of the appropriate kosher supervisors.
No, it's kosher. It is
kosher,
but
but part of kosher is avoiding marred ayin. So I think based on the article that, and you can look at it. It's available online. You should have some indication. Like on the menu, it should say fake pepperoni, for instance.
If you substitute everything that's prohibited, then the prohibition loses its meaning.
Mm-hmm.
The prohibition's in the Torah that says that you
right.
can do A and B,
right.
okay? And and there's a reason for that, and there's a reason we're Jewish, and there's a reason for doing that. If we find ways around it all by making soy milk, if we make soy pepper,
that's sort of interesting. It's an interesting meta question.
Lose the meaning of what is written.
I think it's very interesting meta question. I think a halachic might respond that God only forbade cow's milk for a reason. It's because it was something about cow's milk.
Does it say cow's milk?
Rabbinic,
milk, okay.
It says goat's milk.
It says the mother and its animal.
Or the mother's milk.
The mother's milk.
Yeah.
Right. That's rabbinic tradition. Mm-hmm. It's not just cow. It could be any, you know, domesticated animal.
Is that true for a farmer who raises the cow?
That what?
When a farmer knows that's the cow, but that's the milk over there, right?
It's always a problem. It's not only the mother's milk. Yeah, that's still a problem. But I think the response to your question, you're saying I identify with the concern of looking for loopholes to get around halacha. And I think that's something that, you know, I think that's probably something that should be considered.
This is a product.
That's what I would argue. Meaning, like, it's like, you know, driving on Sunday is not a problem of going around Shabbos.
One of these times I will genetically modified meat that's not made of wheat, it's not made of grain.
Right.
And the big issue will be, is this meat?
Right. No, I think Mars Science is a good question.